Well, welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined once again by Kevin Lucco. Kevin, a lot going on with the St. Paul Saints over the last month period of time, and where we're going to begin at is this new minimum wage bill that was passed in Minnesota. A lot of talk about the minimum wage bill that was passed by Congress as well. A little confusion, the team trying to ensure that they're still matching underneath the Minnesota law. What are your thoughts on this?
It's just a lot of pops and buzzes to me right now, depending on what article you read. Some places say that teams and leagues are going to be in trouble, and then you read different articles and you see, well, there's an exemption where these guys will still be seasonal employees and it's not going to apply to us. So it depends on who you read and who you listen to. It's it goes from being a really red alarm item to no big deal, things will go on as they used to. So I'm at the point right now where until I hear from somebody that's high up on the minor independent league baseball ladder, I'm just going to kind of play it, wait and see. And if there's for some leagues, maybe there's not going to be an opening day this year, but if May comes around and we're playing baseball, I assume that things are going as normal.
Well, I think you're making a good point, which everybody seems to be going ahead like there's going to be baseball. So I would figure that at some point here, somebody's figured out a way to either get around any law that's standing in their way or has worked out something with state officials so that they are eligible to keep playing.
I don't want to get into religion here, but it almost seems like the Bible, that it's one book, but everybody seems to have their own different interpretation of how to read it.
That's a pretty fair assessment right there. Besides that, the huge news that was it's swirling around the Saints right now is the trading of Mark Hamburger to the Atlantic League last Friday. This is going to be a big loss for the team, but one that was in the interest of the player.
Yes, for reasons I think that Mark will be divulging in time, as I know he will post something for his fans to read so that there's not going to be people marching down to CHS Field with pitchforks in their hand when they hear that he's leaving. Mark will let everyone in on why the move to New Britain was made. So it's a good thing. Nothing bad happened. Be rest assured it's in the best interest of Mark, and Saints are still around. It's still going to be fun to go to the ballpark. It'll be it's the same show, just a different cast. So, fans of Mark Hamburger, you know he loves you, but if you were to tell you himself, he'd say, keep going out to the ballpark, keep enjoying yourselves.
Absolutely, and a lot to be excited about so far. It looks like manager George Samus has started to make some big moves. Last Friday, three names that came down that really kind of struck me. John Straka returning back to the team. And then he signs former Wichita Wingnuts Eddie Medina and Mike Devine. Seems like he's really built up quite a quality bullpen and is putting in the foundational pieces for a starting rotation.
He needs to, because I believe that was the downfall of the team last year, was the pitching staff. And obviously, I was compounded when Seth Rosine signs and Caleb Fiobar goes down with the injury, and basically the bullpen was in disarray for the rest of the season. Nobody really had a set role, and it was kind of very day-to-day, and the starters weren't getting deep in the games. So, yeah, it was a mess, and as we see with baseball teams, as the pitching staff struggles, after a while, the hitters just kind of tune out, and they kind of get tired of having to put up 6 or 7 runs a night to try to win a game, and eventually they burn out, the offense dries up, and then when you finally do get good pitching, the hitting's not there. So I'm sure George Samus is hoping to have a much better season from his starting staff, because frankly, last year it got to the point where it was Mark Hamburger and then pray for rain.
Well, I thought the Medina signing was huge, and the fact that he was 9-3 last year in Wichita, great stuff, 7th best ERA in the league. But kind of to me, the unsung hero of that acquisitions was Devine, who could close for this team. He's got like a 95, 96 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah, and the closers are hard to find, and we'll see if, do you know, is he primarily a one-inning guy, or is he someone that could come in the eighth and get a couple guys out and then take the ninth?
He's the kind of guy that if he did 1 year in the Frontier League, the team played 95 games, he pitched in 60 of them. So I think he's, you know, he's a workhorse if you give him the opportunity.
Sure.
The team also brings in, re-signs Vinny Natoli, Ken Frosch, Kes Carter, who was a huge pickup for manager George Samus last year, AAA, former AAA reliever Beck Wheeler. But today we find out today that Noah Perio re-signs back with the team after having his contract purchased earlier in the year. Boy, that's a huge bat for the team.
That's something I believe we've alluded to here in the show, too, is that sometimes these guys get signed and after the first of the year, and basically they just become filler guys for spring training games and don't really get a fair shot at making a ball club in their system. And then, yes, once spring training gets concluded with, they are released, and then they all go back to their independent baseball clubs. So I guess we'll be able to see the talents of Noah Perio this summer at CHS Field.
The last thing we wanted to mention about the Saints this week is for fans who of the NCAA tournament, notice that the Saints were offering a $10,000 prize if a number 16 team defeated a number one team in the NCAA tournament for the first time ever. That actually did occur. The team gave away $10,000. Quite a promotion, I would say.
Yes, I talked to Sean Aronson about that a week ago Monday night, and what we concluded and talked about was, sure, it probably was not ideal that you gave away $10,000. And as Chris Schwab joked about on Twitter, it looks like the employees will be getting Jelly of the Month certificates for Christmas this year. But for that $10,000 he gave away, look at all the publicity the team got from it. That's publicity that there's really no dollar amount that you can put on it. But I would say that I'd say they got $10,000 worth of publicity just from that promotion alone. So you got to look at the positives on that, and definitely kept the team in the news.
We move on to the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who add a few players this last week. But the surprise to me personally was the release of Mikey O'Brien, who'd been such a huge part of their starting rotation. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's with a lot of releases in this league, we don't really know the true story behind it. It could be that he chose to retire or had an injury or just something popped up in his life where he just felt like a baseball career just wasn't the way he wanted to go anymore. So, yeah, it's tough to know what's going on with those sort of transactions unless you have inside info, which I don't. Especially in Winnipeg, they don't wake me up there.
Heading on to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, we first of all want to congratulate manager Michael Schlack, who had a new baby last week, so congratulations to him and his wife.
Yeah, I guess he'll being the first-time manager, he'll be doing it on a little less sleep than he's accustomed to.
That's for sure. Also, the team is having to make some roster moves here to kind of free up some space. I think that at one point, the manager was up to 27 players on the team, which doesn't really bode well when you have a bunch of players being released now in spring training. So they've been releasing or trading away some guys just to clear some space at this point.
Yeah, something we talked about in a previous episode, how unusual was that they had it loaded up on so many guys already. And yeah, it's not a bad idea coming in to, I guess I'd rather have too many guys and not enough, but it does present an interesting dilemma once you got guys getting released from their spring training and their respective MLB clubs. So could be seeing a bunch of transactions coming out of Fargo, maybe looking at trading some guys just out of camp to the teams for future considerations.
Heading on to the Chicago Dogs, you and I were talking about on the last episode about how the team had just a single player signed at that point. That was Josh Gooks and Brown, who came from the Wichita Wingnuts. Now I think they're up to nearly 20, if not over 20 at this point. Manager Butch Hobson has been really busy lately.
Yeah, it seems like every day or so you hear about one or two or three guys that the Dogs are picking up. I thought one of the more interesting ones was, I guess he's got the, I think it's the great nephew or somebody of Eddie Goodell, the guy that, the midget that had one at bat for Bill Veeck in the 40s.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, his great nephew, I believe, was like 6'3", 280 pounds, and spelled his name differently, added an E to the end of it, so I've seen that with families where sometimes within their own family they'll spell last names differently, so I thought that was kind of a little interesting tidbit. Nice tie-in with the Veeck family and Chicago and everything.
The big surprise we saw was Tony Thomas, who had such a huge career the last couple of years with the St. Paul Saints. He signs with the Dogs.
Yes, another what I'd call face of the Saints. This is going to be around CHS. So, well, he will be, just in a different team's uniform. So, Saints fans, yeah, they're going to have to get used to not having Tony around, too. He was he was kind of a Swiss Army knife for George Samus. A guy that could play some outfield, middle infield, first base. So, in a league where you got a smaller roster, guys that are willing to play multiple positions are invaluable. And then throw in his production at the plate, I think Chicago's got a good one with Tony.
Career high 18 home runs last season for Tony Thomas. Heading on to the Sioux Falls Canaries, they already had former Saints catcher Aaron Gretz, now signed Max Garrett, who played for the Saints the last couple of seasons. That's quite a backstop group back there.
Yeah, that's not a bad little tandem, man. It's guys that you're not wasting like a veteran spot on, but they do have experience in the league, so it's a good combo. And so I was telling a friend of mine that's a huge Canaries fan. I said, you are going to love Max. He's a decent ball player. He works hard, but most importantly, he's a really good guy. And yet another guy that Saints are going to have around that fans got used to, and I think it's a face to have in Sioux Falls that I really think the fans are going to enjoy out there.
Absolutely. One of the most enjoyable guys to listen to. Really bright and intelligent and well-spoken and just a nice guy all around. He should be a great addition to that Canaries team. Well, let's head on to the South Division. We now look at the Cleveland Railroaders. The big move out there that we want to discuss is Gabe Suarez out as the team's manager, Shelby Ford being given the opportunity. To be honest with you, I was a little surprised by this move. What about you?
I was a little surprised by the move, and then I was a little surprised that they announced the move. Where are we at now? Did we ever get a full press release on the move?
Not that I've ever received or I've seen on their website. So I think that just we're in limbo about this, but we do know that Shelby Ford is going to be the manager, though.
Well, did they do the news drop, the Friday night news drop? Because we all know how that is. If you want to make a controversial move, you always make it on Friday night when there's the least amount of people reading Twitter or following news. That's when you want to make these kind of maneuvers.
The only thing I've known at this point is that they still have the post about Greg Pruitt remaining as the team's pitching coach, but I have not seen a recent post. I'm going to check this out right now just to see if I'm wrong. But no, there is still not anything directly about who's the manager of the team. So I'm not exactly sure how that's working out, but they have been making... Go ahead.
Maybe they're starting to do what the Chicago Cubs did in the 60s, where they had the College of Coaches. Do you remember hearing about that?
Yeah,
where like with most anything with the Chicago Cubs in the last 100 years until they won the World Series, it failed miserably.
The team has been making several moves all of a sudden. They re-signed three players from last year's team, including Alex Polston, Axel Johnson, and Dylan Moustakas, bringing Greg Golson from the Wichita Wingnuts. The big addition was Matt Helms coming from the Can-Am League.
Yeah, we were wondering if they were going to be piecing their ball club together down there, and yeah, all of a sudden we are seeing some guys being signed, so I suppose if you have uncertainty as to who's actually managing the team, I guess it's kind of hard to focus too much on recruiting players, but it seems like it's starting to clear up a bit down there.
Did want to add that the team re-signed Patrick Mincy, their ace starter from last season as well.
Soon to be dad again.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. Absolutely. And
well, Ray Roller fans, take it easy on Melissa down there.
Yeah, she sounds like she's not having the best of time in terms of trying to figure out the outfits to take with her there. If you read her Twitter account. Sioux City Explorers is the next team we look at. They had two big arms in Taylor Jordan and Patrick Schuster. With the addition of Luis Durango before Tony Campana wound up leaving the team, they did have four major leaguers, still three on this team. These two big arms right there really add a lot to this Sioux City Explorers team.
As far as transactions have been made this offseason, I believe Sioux City has done the most to upgrade their ball club. As we have talked about last month, they added a ton of arms, and now these former big leaguers that they're signing for bats I think Sioux City, I know you can't judge a season on who you have on your team in April, but if they keep this group together and if the players live up to their resume, I think you're going to be seeing another big season from the Explorers. I mean, I hope I didn't give them the kiss of death there, but yeah, it's been a very productive last few months for Mongo. Hats off to him.
You know, I have to say too, and please, this is no offense to Sioux City in any way. Fantastic city, enjoyed being there. You just have to be impressed with the job that Steve Montgomery is doing, that you're able to lure guys that have had this kind of major league experience to kind of a smaller Iowa city, and they're enthusiastic about coming there. I think that says a lot about his skills as a manager and the way that he presents his team.
Yeah, I have spent some time in Sioux City, and no, the city itself is not going to be a draw, especially for a player that has been in the bigs. So obviously, yeah, it's got to be the guys want to come play for Steve Montgomery. So fans of Sioux City, what are you waiting for? Get out to the ballpark. I know Lewis and Clark isn't exactly a great ballpark like some of the others in the American Association, but what else have you got going on? Get out there, catch some ball games. Ticket prices are reasonable, and you're probably going to have a really good team out on the field this year.
Absolutely. As we were talking earlier before the show, we believe now that with the Tony Campana heading for Mexico, that they're down to four vets. I know that manager Steve Montgomery is looking for one big bat, a first baseman at this particular point. Man, I'm thinking if he gets another bat to really kind of drive runs in here at this point, this is going to be the team to beat.
He just did sign Dre Gleason, who hit for a decent average last year. He didn't provide a ton of power, but this was his first professional experience right out of college, so he does have Gleason to fall back on, but yes, ideally I'm sure he would like to get a guy like St. Paul has with Brady Shoemaker, a guy with AAA experience that can be good for 20-plus homers. So we'll see what Montgomery can come up with.
Moving on to the Wichita Wingnuts, the surprising thing for me has been the number of left-handed pitchers signed by the team. They didn't have any on the roster last year. I think one just a season before. I think Josh Robertson has signed four at this particular point. A change in philosophy, maybe?
Or fans sitting on the first base side complaining that no foul balls are coming their way from right-handed bats.
That could be the case. That could be the case. Kansas City T-Bones, they add a huge number of arms to this team. The biggest one of all, though, was the re-signing of Cody Winarski. He had ridiculous numbers last year, Kevin, and I'm wondering why this guy is not back in affiliate ball.
It's an age-old question. I don't know how many times a year we're asking this about guys. It's the same answer. It could be he's lacking a pitch. Something's not clicking with the scouts. He doesn't have an agent pushing hard enough for him. It's hard to say. It could be a whole myriad of things, but as we hope for with every player in the league. We hope that maybe somebody takes notice and gives him his proper opportunity.
A team looking to return to the playoffs this season is the Lincoln Salt Dogs. They add a starter, Derek Gordon, re-signing him this last week.
Yeah, that's it's a good guy to build your staff around, and I was reading that most of their infield is going to be back from last year, and that's a team that made the playoffs, so that's a good start for the Salt Dogs.
They also add Tyler Herr, which I thought was one of the shrewdest moves, because this guy really had a fine season last year for Salina.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting to see how some of these Salina cast-offs do once they're on teams that actually have home games. It's supposed to be on a 100-game road trip like last season.
Now they're in the Can-Am League on a 100-game road trip, so we'll see how that went.
Well, it sounds like they're just going to be playing like...
18, like, yeah.
Right. So,
yeah, right.
Not sure how that works for minimum wage law, but we won't get into that.
Moving on around independent baseball in general, we wanted to first address the fact of there was a huge group of guys that signed to head to Mexico out of the American Association. Dan Johnson, who was pitching and playing first base for the Saints, Tony Campana as examples, Mitch Lamson from Winnipeg. You'll have to correct me because I don't really remember it this way, but it seems Mexican leagues are signing guys a little late this year.
Yeah, that is a little different to see guys popping up down there. Who knows what the deal is with that.
In a surprise news, we're hearing that the Rockland Boulders may be leaving the Can-Am League and joining the Atlantic League. What are your thoughts on that?
It seems to be a natural progression. It seems like they're in a market that can support having games in the earlier parts of the spring, and sounds like they're a good draw out there, and it would be a huge blow, I think, to the Can-Am League, but you can't blame the Boulders if they want to get into a league where, yeah, maybe your payroll's going to be a bit higher, but you're going to get more games at the ballpark. Sounds like they got a very nice ballpark out there, so can't blame the team for wanting to get into the best situation possible for the franchise.
Was Rockland one of the two new teams a couple of years ago that were added to the Can-Am League, or am I thinking wrong?
I believe Rockland has been around for a while. I do remember them being at Midway Stadium, I think, when they're still doing the Can-Am American Association crossover games. I do remember them visiting. I don't remember if it was 2012 or 2013.
Well, today is opening day in Major League Baseball, and despite the fact that I don't think you and I were right about any playoff predictions last year at all, we're going to give you what we believe will be our World Series picks for this year. So would you like to start?
Oh, sure. Why not? How's that? Did I inspire confidence with the tone of voice there? Okay, well, are we just going to go division picks, or are we just going to head right to the Grand Slam?
Let's go with division picks and then who we think will win the World Series. Let's go with that.
Chris, I just dug myself a bigger hole.
Yes, you did. Well, you want me to start?
All right. Yeah, why don't you start? Because then I can just have some time to think and try to sound a little smarter or just copy what you say.
Okay. I'm believing in the American League, we're going to see the Red Sox winning the East, the Indians winning the Central, the Astros winning the West. I'm believing that the two wild card teams out of that are going to be the Yankees and the Angels. And I believe that the Astros will repeat as American League champions. In the National League, I'm going to go with the Washington Nationals, the Milwaukee Brewers to win the Central.
Oh, boy.
The Los Angeles Dodgers to win the West, and my two wild card teams will be the Chicago Cubs and the Colorado Rockies. And I'm believing that the Washington Nationals will go and the Houston Astros will win the World Series in five. Now that I've just cursed every one of those six teams, you tell us what you got.
All right, well, I'm going to get my curses in. I believe the Yankees have really upgraded. That's a dangerous lineup. Because I'm a fantasy baseball nerd, we just drafted the other night, so it kind of got me in touch with what's going on. Look at that lineup. Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Didi Gregorius. Holy smokes, that's
brutal.
Who do you pitch to? And if the Yankees get any pitch tonight, I see them in the East. I am going to jinx the Minnesota Twins and take them to dethrone the Indians in the Central. I think the Twins made a lot of nice moves to upgrade their lineup, and last year they showed a lot of improvement as the year went on. I don't see any reason why the Astros won't hold on to the West. In the wild card, I will say it'll be the Angels. Don't know why, just throwing it out there. And the Red Sox, with the Red Sox winning that. As far as coming out of the American League, yes, I think Houston is going to repeat that again. In the National League, I'm kind of with you pretty much the whole way there with Washington, Milwaukee, L.A., and the wild card, I would say, yeah, Cubs and, heck, maybe even St. Louis. They seem to find a way to sneak in there with minimal talent. But I'd venture to say that it's going to be the Dodgers once again, and we're going to have a rematch of the World Series, and I think this year the Dodgers take it.
Excellent. Well, now that we've...
These predictions paid for by Sean Aronson.
Yeah. Now that we've doomed those teams, Kevin, tell us what's going on out there in Twitter.
Well, right now we're just trying to keep track of everything that is going on with the American Association Ball Clubs. Teams are announcing player moves every day and announcing promotions going on at the ballpark. So we're just trying to keep our best to keep track of everything with that. I do want to add, in my own personal account at Midway Tailgater, in Minnesota here, there's this clown, I'm going to call him, called Negative Dave. He posted last Sunday a picture from a spring training game where he was sitting behind the dugout, and he was behind a screen. And he complained, Eagles, because of someone in New York paying attention. This is my view. And I kind of took him to task. I said, hey, we've had it that way in St. Paul for the last 3 years, and nobody's complained. I said, I went to ball games in Sioux City and Sioux Falls last year where there is no protection behind the dugouts. And frankly, the entire game, I was kind of fearing whenever there was a batter coming up where there could be a, how do you figure, 90 mile hour fastball?
At least.
When it comes off the bat, you're probably looking at, what, exit speed of 95, 98 miles an hour?
Yep.
Okay, that's coming at my face. Even if I'm paying attention, it's going to hit something, whether it be my face, my hands on that, and it's going to do damage. So I hope, and I thought this was discussed, and maybe you could correct me on this, that American Association teams are going to add netting to go all the way down to the end of the dugouts. I don't know if that's a league rule or teams are just being more aggressive about it or what, but yeah, this Negative Dave guy took me to task and said, well, geez, what did you do in high school? Be on a debate team or play tennis? I said, well, I said, yeah, I was on the debate team, but I got kicked off, and I said my goal in life was to be an anonymous smartass on Twitter. So, the debate.
The thing about this, and I know that Major League Baseball in general posted new guidelines, safety guidelines, that ran the netting down to at least dugout length in stadiums, and I think you and I have talked about during the season is that they do all these promotions and things during games that are requiring you to be on your smartphone. And
exactly. I was just going to bring that up.
Somebody's going to get killed, you know, trying to answer a question related to something going on with the team when a fastball gets blasted down them or a bat launches into the stands and nails somebody. So, you know, I'm sorry if your view isn't as great as you would like it to be. I think your life is a little more valuable than that.
Yeah, and I think you can still see the ball game. It's not like you're trying to look through a knothole.
Yeah, people have been sitting behind home plate for years and have never complained about a net being back there. So, you know, I don't think anybody's having their vision of the game ruined.
And if that's ruining your view, well, move back about 20 rows and you won't even know the net's there.
Absolutely.
You'll still
right.
be behind it.
Absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. What is the blog coming out soon, or are you already still working on that?
Well, we're kind of got involved with some hockey stuff in the last 24 hours. I've kind of diverted my attention, but yes, as the season gets closer and more news comes out, I'll do an all-encompassing beginning of the season blog. So I'll just say it, I've been lazy. Not like Rob Pineda, the busiest man in independent baseball.
I'm trying to be. If you're interested, there's still American Association Daily where you can find out what's going on around the league. We did player profiles this week of new St. Paul Saints reliever Mike Devine, as well as manager Butch Hobson, the Chicago Dogs manager. Manager Brent Cleveland will be featured this weekend, and we did a feature on James Campbell, reliever for the Wichita Wingnuts as well. You can listen to Butch Hobson's new podcast, Top Dog, that began today. Manager Steve Montgomery still has his podcast on Monday, and we'll be rejoining Michael Schlacht next week now that he's has a little more time after his wife finally had a baby. We'll be restarting back next week, and manager George Samus will be joining us soon again, and I believe that we're going to have two other managers that will be doing podcast shows with this season, so that should be pretty exciting. So,
like I said, the busiest man in independent baseball.
Just trying to keep people informed. That's all that's going on out there. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us this week. I'm Rob Pineda, joined by Kevin Lucco, and we'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.